Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:30 p.m. here on Monday, February 20th. We are in the Belts Committee Room at State Capitol, and I would ask folks to ensure that their cell phones are on mute. Joining to me today is President Vice Chair Gary Stevens, Senator Elvie Gary Jackson, and myself, Lukey Gail Tobin. Please let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. We are joined today by Sydney and Marigwin holding down the recording fort. And I would like to give folks a little bit of an agenda of how we're going to proceed today. We are going to first hear Senate Bill 14, sponsored by Senator Scott Kawasaki's office, and then we'll be taking up a presentation by the University of Alaska on update on what's happening in their neck of the woods. Please let the record reflect that we are joined by Senator Keel here at 3:31 p.m. So moving on to Senate Bill 14, Senate Education Committee held their first hearing of Senate Bill 14 on February 8th. We took public testimony on our second hearing on February 10th. For those who need a quick refresher, Senate Bill 14 seeks to implement a temporary retirement incentive program for public employees here in the state of Alaska, and it will allow school districts to rehire retired educators through a 12-month contract. Senator Kawasaki is not here present with us, but I see his staff, Joe Hayes, if you'd like to come up to the dais. And before we proceed, are there any last questions or final comments about this piece of legislation before us? Seeing none, Senate Education Committee has heard public testimony and committee members have the fiscal notes for this bill. My office has not received any amendments, and it's my intention to pass the bill out today and send it to Senator Bjorkman's Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Senator Stevens, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to report Senate Bill 14, Worker LS0180/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
If there is no objection, Senate Bill 14 is reported from the Senate Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And we're going to take a brief at ease to pass the bill around. Thanks, Joe. We're back on the record here in Senate Education. Please let the record reflect that at 3:32 p.m., Senator Bjorkman joined us on Teams. Joining us today from the university for their presentation and overview is University President Pat Pitney, who I believe is also on Teams. We have Vice President of Academic Students and Research, Paul Layer, who I also believe is on Teams. We have the Dean of the College of Health, Deborah Craig, who I also believe is on Teams. And we have Dean of the School of Education, Tanya Desai, who I also believe is on Teams. And here in person, live and in person, is Director of State Relations, Chad Hutchinson. President Pitney, welcome to Senate Education. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you so much, Senator. This is Pat Pitney, for the record, President of the University of Alaska. And just appreciate the committee hearing our overview, and we'll kind of speed through some of this introductory so you can get into the meat of the presentations and topics we really want to spend time discussing. So I'm on page 2. Just a reminder, you know, we're we're Alaska's public system of higher education, and we've got our three universities, UAF, UAA, and UAS. UAF is our research university. UAA is our comprehensive university, our primary healthcare workforce university, and our and really the, I call it the workforce workhorse. It's the, where the majority of our students attend. And Southeast is a small regional university that capitalizes on its place, focuses on the economy of the Southeast, or the fisheries and ocean sciences, maritime, significant work in the mariculture space, but also tremendous workforce training in the mining and other areas. That we're also proud of Southeast's work in the education space. And you'll hear more about that as we go forward. Part of keeping our students in state is providing choice. Each university provides a unique experience on campus, but each university also provides a unique set of programs that reaches students where they are. I was getting ready for State of the University talk tomorrow, and one of the examples is our Kenai Peninsula College, they have a process tech program there in Kenai Peninsula and also in Fairbanks. But the Kenai Peninsula College, over the time of COVID, put in an immersive reality simulation equipment that allows students, even in low bandwidth areas, to do the instrumentation training via distance. And so this helps people who are not local complete a majority of their program. I think that's a... And then, you know, Fairbanks, for instance, has an aviation program for aviation mechanics. It's one of seven in the nation that's a one-year, 8-to-5 intense study block to get a Part 135, and the demand for mechanics is huge. At the same time, Anchorage has a semester-based one for more traditional age students who also want to pursue, say, a management degree with it. So it's that those choices that allow us to keep our students in state. It's also quality, and you can see the quality of our education graduates. You're going to hear more about quality of our engineering graduates. They can get a job anywhere in the world. So it's that balance of meeting students where they are in the state, the jobs that are here. It's also bringing that quality for any job that they would want anywhere in the nation or in the world. The next page is our priority focus areas. So early on in my tenure, we brought to the board our essentially a strategic plan, but it was goals and measures. So kind of recognizing the turmoil we went through for several years, we needed to do a more focused and expedited strategic plan. And part of that plan are these focus areas. So these are the things that are really top of mind as we're moving forward. And I've asked the board for our plan to be dynamic. But first and foremost is increasing student enrollment. And this is very much focused on keeping them in degree programs that are critical to the state. And everybody knows how acute our workforce shortages are. The university, the more people we can keep in state and the more people we can attract from out of state, just is the strategy, is one of the easiest strategies for our state to meet our workforce needs. Next one is on workforce and economic development initiatives. This was very much the work in the drones, the critical minerals, heavy oil, mariculture. I'm missing one. Some, we'll get it at the end of the presentation. I know there's a slide on it. Healthcare. We've got many, many programs moving forward fast. And what I'd like to say is we're working on building the industries of the future. So in the drones program, it's been a 10-year program, largely supported by the federal government. The state put support in last year. The state has also supported it, but put a major bump in last year. Alaska can be the first commercial, first state where commercial unmanned vehicles are used as how we do business. And this is in freight, this is in monitoring. And it would change our landscape if we have unmanned planes flying freight, flying fuel, doing searches in a search and rescue situation, monitoring wildfires, monitoring the pipeline, counting animals, counting fish for our fish and game. It changes the economic equation. And we are poised with our position, well, with Kathy Cahill's position on the safety committees at the highest level with FAA nationally, and with our work with the Department of Transportation in Alaska, to have Alaska be the place where we try out this commercial industry in a very, very safe way. And I think that's exciting. Mariculture is another one. It's on the cusp. We have the ocean, we have the water, we have the coastline to make mariculture a real industry in the state, working together with Southeast Conference and the Mariculture Alliance. We have opportunities there to have industries that we hadn't had before. So that's what that bullet is. Promoting Arctic policy, research, and leadership. University of Alaska Fairbanks is the top in the nation, third in the world, as the university cited for research in Arctic and Arctic climate. And we're already in the top of the nation, and spreading that word and providing the understanding of that is very important. We're going to talk about teacher education. Last year, almost more than a year ago, we started the Alaska Native Success Initiative, focusing on having our faculty and staff and students represent the population of our state. And each university is moving fast on those plans, and we have an umbrella opportunity. Looking at our finance industry and expanding our business workforce, this is every business is asking for HR people, for management information people, for managers, for accountants. Building our enrollment in that through partnerships is very important. Increased fisheries, that kind of goes along with our mariculture work. And then, of course, looking internally and making sure we're efficient. So those are our focus areas. That's where we're spending our management attention. And it doesn't mean that we're not also looking at how we can help in the tourism industry, or how we can support other things that aren't explicitly written on that page. But these are where we see our growth opportunities. Any questions before we go on?
We don't have any over here. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you. I think that the next item is our enrollment highlights. The we need to celebrate here. So this fiscal year is the first year in 9 years that the university isn't grappling with major state budget reductions. And with that financial stability has come focus and our ability to promise students that their programs are going to be there, to promise students that their financial aid is going to come through. You all know how the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Higher Education Fund has been threatened so many times. This is the first year not only the university could promise stability, but that Higher Education Fund and the Alaska Performance Scholarship hasn't been threatened. That confidence to our students is absolutely essential. And it doesn't take a ton. It just takes stability. It's got to be that it's there. It's not going to be gone tomorrow. And so this spring, year over year, we have just over a 1% increase. But we have to, because we have smaller upper division classes, because of the small classes coming in, we have to have really big first-time freshman classes to counteract those smaller classes in the out years. So this 1% this year, we anticipate being 3% in the fall. And then it can grow much faster from there as we rebuild, and not rebuild, as we fill the programs that we have. Because there is a lot of programs that we were able to maintain through the crisis. Yes, there were programs we had to let go, but there were many programs that were maintained, and now people have the confidence to come and use them. Dual enrollment. We have more than 2,300 high school students concurrently enrolled in high school at the same time they're taking college classes, or in college at the same time they're taking their high school. We have a very aggressive goal. We have targets for each of our goal areas in our goals and measures. We have a very aggressive goal in dual enrollment because two things. Number one, it's a much faster path for the high school student, but we are getting a much higher return on students who take dual enrollment who come to one of our universities. It's substantially higher than the rest of the high school population. Teacher prep we're going to talk about soon, and we reestablished a K to three bachelor's in early childhood education, and this is actually an initial licensure program. So if you stay in first to third grade in elementary, it's a elementary licensure as well as early childhood, brings in much of the reading requirements. But just that program, Tanya's on here, but just that program, the last time I looked was 77 students. And so, tremendous. Last year, the legislature funded a pilot program to fund teacher internships or student teaching. That takes a huge financial burden off, and we anticipate that getting more students to graduation. Healthcare, we have the same financial support from the legislature for the clinical programs, and although we've struggled with enrollment nationwide, everybody has struggled with enrollment, and we're turning the corner and beating the average for sure, but we want to do more on enrollment. The average debt is below the national average, and it is getting smaller as we go forward. If anybody gets a chance to watch the State of the University, I'll be talking a lot about the financial support opportunities for students going forward. Next page is one we don't really have to spend a lot of time on. It is just a snapshot of where we currently are in terms of our student headcount. and our faculty and staff, UA scholars, Alaska Performance Scholars, dual enrollment students, and alumni. So our faculty and staff are 1,500 fewer than they were prior to the budget issues. Our UA scholars are rebounding. We're seeing, I think that 48% was a little bit optimistic. I think it was a snapshot on a day that some big news hit, but I think it's a little optimistic. I think we're closer to 35% than 48% that was on the previous page, but still much higher than last year's applications at this time. With the stability in the Higher Education Fund, our Alaska Performance Scholars number can really rebound. And we'll be working with the high schools to make sure that every student knows the opportunity they have, because that Alaska Performance Scholarship and Alaska Education Rec is open to every person in high school who takes a rigorous curriculum. And we're working with different legislators, and Chad's going to have to remind me. I know Andy Story's introduced the bill, but I'm not sure on the Senate side. Doing the small tweaks on the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program will make a huge difference in how many students we'll be able to attract to University of Alaska. And the more people we attract to the University of Alaska, the more workforce the state has. We do these industry reports about how many people are going through our programs that link to an industry. We find that nearly 80% of our graduates are working in Alaska within a year. Department of Labor came out with a report, and it shows that about 25% of the people who go out of state come back for long term. So you get 80% if they stay in state, 25% who come back. Keeping them in state in the first place is a really good strategy for our workforce. With that, page six. Hang on just a second. Let me see what my page six is.
Well,
oh, thank you, President. Exactly what I was talking about. Chad, did you change to page six?
For the record, this is Chad Hutchison. The answer is yes, I have changed to page six. And the bill in question was SB 56 by Senator Dunbar, is the Senate equivalency.
Thank you.
Great. But that is critically important. What we found during COVID is when we were able to not have the testing. So there was an emergency regulation during COVID that you didn't have to take the national tests, ACT or SAT, and the work keys. We had the people who came were equally successful whether the test was taken or the test was not taken. And that test is a financial burden, but it's also a place-based burden. They're largely only available in Fairbanks, Anchorage, or Juneau, and only on a couple of days in the year. So one of them is the test. The other is when do we announce the scholarship? So right now the scholarships are not awarded to students until the August after they graduate high school. We need to make that in the fall of their senior year so they have certainty of coming in. Yes, we could make it conditional that they finish X, Y, and Z, but the award has to be in the fall so that they can have that certainty about where they're going to go to college. And Chad, if there's anything I should have added on that one, it's all yours. And then I will turn it over to Tanya, to Dr. Dose, to discuss the education.
For the record,
thank you, President Pitney.
For the record, this is Chad Hutchison, State Director for Government Relations. The only other addition that we're thinking about with respect to House Bill 31 is there is a change with the monetary values, which were set in statute 10 years ago. Inflation has had a lot of effects, and I believe there's an effort to increase those figures. So that's just something for consideration.
Thank you. And I do believe we have a few questions. I just want to note that I am communicating with Senator Bjorkman, so if you see me look down my phone, it's just to ensure that he doesn't have a question and to ensure that he also has an opportunity in case that arises. President Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, President Pitney. I appreciate your report. I am extremely concerned about the loss of faculty. And people go to universities because of the quality of the faculty. You mentioned there were 1,500 fewer faculty and staff. Could you be very specific about how many fewer faculty you now have than before? And what are we going to do about that? What areas do you need to concentrate on in replacing those lost faculty?
Well, thank you for that question. I'm going to be in the ballpark, but I don't have the exact number on the top of my head. Roughly 500 fewer faculty. When you lose $100+ million in state funding, people are going to be impacted. And the way we rebuild our faculty is by providing that financial stability, energizing, and providing the confidence for our students that our programs are here to stay. I feel like we have that stable foundation and that investment. And then it's one by one. It's going to be partnerships. You know, I tell the university community we're not going to go back to where we were. We are, as our enrollment grows, we can add faculty in those programs. We'll add faculty. As we have clear investment and partnership in particular programs, we'll add faculty. I think, as you'll hear about the bachelor and the BA in early childhood, I think Dr. Desai could talk about how they'll gear up their faculty. We started based on industry demand, a master's in fisheries and marine policy, and we started it using the strength of UAA and UAS in a partnership because neither one had the strengths alone. So UAF has the strong fisheries and ocean sciences. UAA had the strong public administration. Those two programs came together. We anticipate that the enrollment is going to allow us to hire two additional faculty, one on each side, to move it forward. We bet on that enrollment and hired and provided the funds in advance to fund those faculty. I think another thing was the state's investment in the health programs. So there were two pieces. There was $3.5 million put into the UAA health programs. One piece was for filling the positions, the nursing faculty positions that had vacated during COVID because there's such a high demand for nursing people, whether they're faculty or not. Nursing faculty are by nature some of the highest quality qualified faculty or nurses around. We were losing them to the industry. So that money was allowed us to pay our nurses, nursing faculty at a level that's going to compete in the market, and we could hire those that had left back into the program. It also allowed us to hire into the high demand allied health fields. But the state support is going to be in some ways the exception. It's going to be the enrollment. As we bring that enrollment up, we're going to see the faculty, we'll be investing in the faculty in those programs. So I hope that helps.
Thank you, President Pitney. I, in no way, a criticism of you, but you were dealt a bad hand, and I'm really sorry to see so many outstanding faculty members no longer with us. And what often happens, I've seen in school districts, and you pink slip folks, that you don't get back the best often. And anyway, I wish you the very best of luck. We need a strong university, and we need a strong faculty. Thank you.
Thank you, President Stevens. I echo this as I am a graduate of sociology program, which is no longer at the university, us being one of the only public universities, I think the only public university without a sociology program. With that, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation thus far, President Pitney. I'm going to go back to my Labor and Commerce Committee because we have had so many presentations there from different unions throughout the state, and they're constantly talking about staffing issues, budget cuts that contribute to staffing issues, pay, not having a defined benefit, you know, and how morale is really not so good right now. So my question to you is, with you and your staff, how's morale in your organization with all of these obstacles that you're currently dealing with? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I'm going to give you two answers. It is so much better than it was 2 years ago. That's one answer. The second answer, it's still hard. People are wearing a second hat. People remember kind of the environment they came out of and kind of the pain of seeing people either being laid off or leaving around them. And it's not easy. But what I've seen since we've gotten a stable footing, that there's a chance now to look forward. Okay, here's where we are. All right, we're not what we used to be, but here's where we are. How do we use the assets we have to move forward? And then also, how do we use what we learned in COVID in terms of kind of a more innovative way of doing business, a different way of, I mean, those two things were back to back, our budget issues and COVID. And it was a complete double whammy. But I think a lot of people, knowing that we're not going right back to where we were, it's just not possible. It was 30% in state funding. Okay. But if incrementally we think about our enrollment, we think about our partnerships with industry and businesses and school districts, we are back on a footing that we can think forward. And I think that stability is absolutely necessary for thinking forward. So I wouldn't say that our morale is super high. I mean, our, you know, last year or this current year that we're standing in now is the first time our staff had received a raise in 5 years, have say 1% increase in the middle somewhere. Our faculty, they're retroactive because of the union negotiations extended a little bit too long. Their raise for this fiscal year is in the supplemental and the amended budget, and the raise going forward is in the regular budget. But our faculty haven't seen that raise yet. Our staff have seen a small raise, a 2% raise, so would make it a 3%. But also very, you know, I give our faculty and staff credit. We have modest annual increases, and it's, you know, it's not easy. We have, like other organizations, we have a high rate of need for workers. Our vacancy rate is high, and that's both refilling people who have left and retired, as well as gearing up on some of these big projects that we've been working on.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, I do want to note, as I forgot to say this at the beginning of this conversation, that for the record, I am a PhD candidate at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, so that folks do know that there is a conflict there. If you'll continue to proceed.
I'll turn it over now to Dr. Desai to talk about the teacher education program and the Alaska Education Consortium, Alaska College of Education Consortium.
Thank you, President Pitney. My name is Tanya Doucet, Dr. Tanya Doucet. I'm the Dean of the School of Education, and I have been in this role since July 1. It was my very first meeting in this role that I actually got to join the Alaska College of Education Consortium and be brought up to speed rapidly on what we've been working on. So on the handouts that we provided, slide 7 and slide 8, I believe, we're covering teacher education. When you take a look at the materials on teacher education in particular, we want to call out some of the work that we've been doing in ACEC. In particular, we launched this year with a deep focus on connecting as schools of education. So September 23rd and 24th, we held an in-person workshop here in Anchorage for faculty from all three MAUs to attend and gather, looking at what are the pressing issues in front of us. That has set the tone for much of our work this year. In December, actually, I gave an update to the State Board of Education where we talked about this a little bit, and there was also testimony given by Dr. Amy Vinlove, Dean of the University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Education, and Dr. Mary Wagner from the University of Alaska Southeast, who is in their superintendent preparation program, where we shared that all three universities are working actively on registered apprenticeship programs, trying to manage these additional areas where we can address the teacher pipeline and how can we get teachers into the classroom and keep them there. So as you take a look at what we're offering, we do have fully accredited programs across all three MAUs. As President Pitney mentioned earlier, the BAEC was brought online this academic year. I can give you a small boost in your numbers. The last number I saw was 86. I want to remind you that in August, we did not have those 86 students. Those are brand new students to the system that have entered the program and represent an increase in enrollment and the demand that we have for early childhood education. We're excited to be able to offer both licensure and non-licensure tracks that will meet our needs across the state, including our Head Start programs, which are in dire need of staffing as well. When you look at what our PACE group is offering, that is at UAA in particular, the Professional and Continuing Education Group partners with school districts and agencies, including the Alaska School Counselor Association and the Alaska Staff Development Network. We provide courses, workshops, conferences, and institutes that are offered for non-academic credit, professional credit, so that our teachers and leaders can submit these credits to the state for relicensure needs. Our K-12 outreach office, and I should mention in particular, the Educators Rising program has been quite active. Their conference, their annual conference, has been going on the last few days. Last weekend, in fact, we had high schoolers interested in being teachers participating in the annual competition. Yesterday, we had sessions, and today, in fact, students were treated to a joint session where they could see all of the programs available in the schools of education at the three institutions, and Dr. Vinlove was leading that session. We also had virtual participation by our academic advisors from the other campuses so that students could engage with all of us equally. CAPER continues to produce fantastic research on education policy. They partner specifically with ASCA, I should mention, and a couple of our other professional organizations to help disseminate the findings of their work to our school leaders so that they can be as informed as our state leaders are in terms of what research is coming out and what topics are relevant. Right now, I know that they've been looking at education funding models and they've been looking at different approaches across the state for retention. When you look at the other aspects of ACEC, I believe I can share this next bit, President Pitney. Can I announce our liaison? So we are very excited that Bridget Weiss, the superintendent of Juneau Schools, has previously announced that she would be retiring at the end of this year. She will be joining our forces to help us ensure that districts and anybody, any stakeholder interested in education, public education, knows exactly who they can work with. Bridget is a very well-established professional in the educational world and public education in particular. She is the current president of our Superintendents Association. So she will be a very visible gateway. School districts will be able to connect with us rapidly, ask questions, develop dual credit relationships, look at other opportunities that we might not be considering she will be able to provide that access for us. I also want to mention that ACEC meets on a monthly basis. We have multiple subcommittees that meet regularly, including marketing, which is very visible through our AlaskaTeach.org website. There's also been the Empower Alaska campaign coming out of the state that our subcommittee has helped contribute to. We have a Registered Apprenticeship Program subcommittee that is working actively with Jackie Garcia in the Alaska Department of Labor office so that we can create registered apprenticeships and get these new lines, new avenues for teacher preparation out there. We are also working on expanding what we think about in terms of what's possible. As we look at the different types of licenses that districts are dealing with, as we look at what is happening with DEED and their different subcommittees tackling these issues with teacher retention and alternative pathways to preparation, all of our members of ACEC have subscribed to the state notices so that we can attend these meetings, that we can be visible, we can be hearing the conversations, and work those back into what's happening in terms of legislation and policy changes. Earlier, you heard President Pitney mention that the BA in early childhood education does incorporate science of reading elements. As we were going through that approval process with the State Board of Education last year, we were very purposeful in ensuring that multiple courses addressed what was going to be coming out of those regulations. So these courses are already being offered and they're already addressing these needs while we work on helping in-service teachers. And that's where PACE will come into play in helping our in-service teachers with professional development. ACEC is currently hosting a series of three workshops to ensure that all faculty and staff at the three MAUs are aware of what is the science of reading, what are the national practices that are changing policy, and what is happening at the school level. How do we reconcile scholarship with practice so that we can make these actionable changes in our coursework? We just completed the first workshop last week. We hosted Dr. Cynthia Brock, who is the endowed chair in literacy from the University of Wyoming. Next month, we'll be hosting Dr. Dana Robertson, who is a member of the International Literacy Association Board of Directors and the Literacy Program Coordinator at Virginia Tech University. Both faculty are graciously giving their time to share with our faculty on what is that landscape nationally and what can we be doing in our courses to make purposeful change for our leaders and our future teachers. Paul, would you like to talk about slide 8 with me?
Through the chair, Paul Lair, Vice President for Academics. I think you've covered much of what we need to cover in that slide number 7, Dr. Dazé. So I have nothing more to add with that, but I do appreciate the work that's being done, again, to bring to bring back the program at UAA and early childhood education. So nothing to add on that one. And then I think you will talk about the biennial report, Alaska's Universities for Alaska Schools, in the next slide. If you would do that as well, that would be great.
Just one moment. We have a question here from President Stevens.
Well, it's not so much a question as a statement. You're taking a very aggressive approach. It can't be aggressive enough. We are in serious problems in this state and finding the teachers we need. We are hiring teachers from other countries because we don't have enough teachers to, in Alaska, enough teachers to hire from out of the state. So whatever you can do to improve the situation is wonderful. And I appreciate all you are talking about. I appreciate all that Dr. Layer has done in the past and in issue of dual enrollment. So thank you. Keep it up.
Thank you, President Stevens. I note that a number of our districts are employing teachers on M1 visas right now. It's been a very hot conversation with our superintendents and how can we help them and how can we address this particular issue. We are excited to work on some very creative ways that I hope in a year we can give you a more substantive update.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, please proceed.
Oh, yes. So slide 8 is part of our biennial report for the legislature in accordance with AS 1440-190. You can look at, from this graph, you can see the color coding of the percent and number of UA alumni teaching in Alaska's school districts. I want to connect this particular slide back to the conversation about ACEC in the previous slide. We are also working on a project called Ecosystem Mapping that will help us give the legislature and our stakeholders
more specific details and data about our partners. Right now, this graph shows you the number of alumni teaching in our districts, but we know that our impact is a little bit more than just what's happening at the teacher level. It's also what's happening with our administrators and our other partnerships. So where you see this beautiful visual, and you can see that it jumps out at you that as we look at those smaller numbers, 3, 2, 6%, I'm not satisfied with only 6% of the teachers in that district being Alaska alumni. We need to work on that. Our ecosystem mapping project will help us be more confident in these numbers and will also help us identify quickly where the gaps are in our partnerships so that we can look at districts that might be in need that may not necessarily be demanding a partnership, but there's an opportunity there. So as we look at these numbers, we can take away a couple of messages. One of them being key, first and foremost, our enrollment is bouncing back and our number of graduates are bouncing back. This is also an opportunity for us to more deeply connect and diversify our partnerships, our recruiting. This type of data and having it in front of us with visualizations on a regular basis will help us identify where can we be working to strengthen relationships, where can we be working to get numbers up, where can we develop those relationships. Questions about this slide?
This is Chair Tobin. I do have one question regarding outreach. For those who have some college but no degree, what does outreach look like to that population?
That's a picture that will vary widely. Is there something specific that you are looking for in terms of outreach engagement, both professional development and working with them is what I can answer. So I'm
I think there's two avenues, one in the paraprofessional world, and then the second in looking at this graduate number for AY21-22 is 153. Knowing that there's over 500 open positions at ASD alone, I'm a little bit worried that that number is not going to necessarily meet the need within one of the largest communities of Alaska and the community I serve in.
You've definitely raised a couple of very valid points that have dominated our conversation. So in terms of paraprofessionals, we are working within PACE to see what does professional development to our paraprofessionals look like. I've also been working with one rural and one urban district, I don't want to name names, that are helping me think about the different constraining needs of what can we do to provide development of highly qualified educators in the classroom who are paraprofessionals and get them to that AAS, or excuse me, not to the AAS, but to the bachelor's degree so that we can get them to that type A license. This has been a conversation at multiple of our ACEC committee members, or committee meetings rather, where we're looking at, does that look like a dual credit opportunity with high schoolers and a homegrown, or does it look like family members, community members who have been working as paraprofessionals or could be working as paraprofessionals in the schools? And then what does it look like to have formal partnerships to help facilitate that place-based learning experience? This is where the lines blur a little bit between what could be an apprenticeship and what could be a homegrown or grow your own program that districts are managing to produce licensed paraprofessionals and then type A licensed educators in the classroom. But then I understand completely when I look at those numbers and then I look at the vacancies we have in our districts, we don't necessarily have the population to support what we need in the classroom. And that's where we're having to get very creative on what does recruitment look like. We've long recruited teachers into the classroom in Alaska after the bachelor's degree, where they've already graduated from another university. There are several faculty at all three institutions who are having conversations on what does marketing look like to bring them here after high school, make them fall in love with Alaska and fall in love with the Alaska classroom and stay. How do we convince them to stay? So we're working on what we can do, and I understand that there are other aspects to this equation that are being worked on by the Board of Education through committees looking at compensation and retirement. But we're trying to change the narrative where we can. Where haven't we recruited where we can get the numbers up? And that's one of the areas.
If we have, if I might, this President Pitney, I just add a couple of things. You know, we have Educators Rising, which has been a supported program that starts in the high school to address the dual enrollment issues, or not the issues, to get more high school students identifying that they want to become a teacher in high school. So that's one program. The Dr. Desai is talking from her experience on the paraprofessionals. I know both UAA and or UAF and UAS have partnerships on paraprofessionals because it's in combination with the school district. And then I think the work we're doing in the apprenticeship route is also a huge outreach. But I'm pleased with the teachalaska.org website and the work we're doing with the foundation to highlight educators as a positive career field. And you'll see those ads coming out. I don't know if they've hit Gavel yet or other areas. I know I know it's almost finished and they're planning to roll those out, but you know, education as a career field. But we've got some things that are bigger than what we can, the university alone can do, and that's why we're in partnership. One of the big things is, you know, when I started doing analyses, you know, when I first started at the university in 91, I was doing wage analysis. You know, at that time, our K-12 teachers in Alaska were paid twice the national average and had by far the best retirement system. So it was easy to attract new teachers to Alaska. Over the time, it's compressed. Now I think somebody can correct me wrong, but we're not even at average on our teacher pay, and we have one of the least desirable retirement systems. So what we're talking about are people who want to be here. My son's a teacher. He's a high school chemistry teacher. He's teaching AP second year working for South High School. He wants to be in Alaska. But if he just wanted to teach chemistry, he didn't care where he lived, he'd be looking somewhere else. He's not, because he really loves his job and he really loves Alaska. But we have a specific market, people who really want to be here, until we address some of those other big systemic things. We have capacity in our education programs. We need more students.
Thank you, President Pitney. President Stevens.
Well, thank you. I think the issue of dual enrollment is one the university has paid enormous attention to and worked hard on over the years. I thought the legislature could help you out with that. We weren't able to do that this last year, but could maybe a report on what's happening in dual enrollment? I know contracts have been made with districts. Are we progressing in that area? And I assume you're going on without our support, but that's great. I appreciate that and congratulate on that. Maybe Dr. Layer, where are we in terms of agreements with school districts?
Through the chair, Paul Layer, University of Alaska. Thank you, President Stevens. We are continuing to grow our programs, both our face-to-face or on-site middle colleges, as well as our online Alaska Advantage program. Last I heard, we had for the Alaska Advantage, which is our online program, we had agreements with over 50 school districts and homeschoolers and other areas, and that continues to grow. That program is very popular, providing access to dual enrollment opportunities to students where they're not in a place where we have a campus or even an access. Obviously, broadband and communication is a challenge for some of those students and districts, but we have been able to grow those partnerships. This next year, we just announced that at the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District, we'll be expanding the Alaska North Star College at Fairbanks. Currently, it was limited to 40 students. I think it's going up over 100, and will be established in a little bit as a more formal middle college here in Fairbanks. And then in Anchorage, we are getting new agreements with the Anchorage School District to grow programs with UAA as partnerships. So in all of our communities, also in Southeast, we are seeing some growth in those programs. So as President Pitney mentioned earlier, it's our area of largest growth. is getting more students, dual enrollment students, to come in, and those students are successful. We are collecting data that shows that those students, when they come, that they pass at higher rates, that they also finish their degrees faster, and obviously with less debt because of the efforts there. So, you know, Senator Stevens or President Stevens, we were not able to get that bill over the finish line, but I think we are moving forward in leaps and bounds in that area. And we're very excited about seeing those programs grow as more districts come to the university in all of these different capacities. So, again, we can get you more details on some of the partnerships that we're seeing growing and information about our graduates as well. So thank you.
Thank you. It'd be great to see that information. Thanks.
Thanks, Vice President Lehrer. If you could get that to the committee, we'll be happy to disperse it.
Sure. Will do. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions here from the committee, please proceed.
Through the chair, this is Paul Lehrer. I'd like to now turn our attention to slide 9 and ask Dean Debbie Craig from the UAA College of Health to talk a bit about the UAA School of Nursing program expansion and other developments in our nursing programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lehrer. Through the chair, this is Debbie Craig. I'm new to the UAA College of Health, and I currently have COVID, so pardon my lack of video. I'm sparing you all the video presence right now. But with that, I'm here to talk about the expansion of our nursing program. We're all, everybody across the country is very clear that we are very, very short staffed when it comes to nursing at our hospitals and clinics. And there is no difference in that with our nursing education programs and the faculty that we're able to hire. Currently, faculty can make about twice as much if they go out and work clinically. Fortunately, we have a lot of faculty that love what they do, and so we have a lot of faculty that are staying. But one of our biggest challenges with this expansion is to hire enough faculty to accommodate the growth in student numbers. For every 8 students, we have to have 1 faculty assigned to them in a clinical setting, so not in the classroom, but at their clinical site. So that kind of skyrockets the number of faculty that we need across the state. As you're all most likely aware, we have programs in 14 different sites around the state, from Bethel to Nome to Dillingham to Juneau to Ketchikan and up in Fairbanks also. So we have programs across the state, and we need faculty in each of those positions. So with that, this extra funding on the $3.5 million state investment for FY23 has been extremely helpful. We've been able to hire 8 new nursing faculty to support the program growth, and we have 5 more searches underway. That's going to dramatically increase the number of students that we can take in with that. So for our regular RN programs, and that is at the AAS or the BS level, we currently admit we're up to 204 students a year right now. I believe that's a growth for about 20 from last year. And within the next 2 years, we hope to have that up to 260 students by 2025. The growth in our master's programs, and that is our Master of Science for Nursing Practice and our Doctor of Nursing Practice programs and our F&P programs. We currently admit 28 students per year, and we hope to be able to admit 36 within the next 2 years for those programs. And that includes our nurse practitioner with a mental health focus also, which we're in dire need of all across the country. So with that, we also are expanding with a reinvestment in our RAN program, which is the recruitment and retention of Alaska Native nurses. And we are bringing in more and more Alaska Native students, and they have a connection through this program, the RAN program. We hired a new coordinator, Melissa Harris, who is doing an outstanding job. And most of that growth and increased focus has happened due to a Primera Foundation grant that we've received, and they've been really fantastic to work with. So we're trying to spread the good word that our RAM program is up and running. And then additionally, we are renovating Sally Munsterett Hall, a facility on the Anchorage campus, to create more simulation space and more specialized lab space. And what that will do is replace some of the need for having our students out at clinical sites in the communities and give them an ability to get some clinical experience in a simulation environment, which will allow us to grow our nursing program by up to 20% more capacity when we can get that up and running. And 20% growth in a nursing program within a couple of years is pretty much unheard of across the country. This is my first year here at University of Alaska at Anchorage, and I came from Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, Arizona, and our nursing program had very, very similar challenges with not being able to hire enough faculty, having plenty of space and resources to expand, but we just couldn't hire the faculty. And we need to be able to do that. So we're starting a nurse educator. We're re-envisioning our nurse educator program so that we can grow our own of sorts with that and get more nurses into it. We're also trying to reach out to our clinical nurses who are just now thinking about retirement after making it through COVID. And seeing if they want to come back and be a professor with us. So we're trying a whole bunch of different things to try and increase our faculty, number of faculty for the nursing program. One of the challenges, as I mentioned, is not having enough clinical placement sites for our students, especially in Anchorage, oddly enough, and getting enough faculty out at our statewide sites. So having faculty that want to live and work in Bethel or Nome is one of our challenges, but we're finding little by little we're finding people to fill those roles. Thank you for your attention today. Can I answer any questions?
I see we have a question here from Senator Keel.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Dean Craig, thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it. Can you walk us through where those 13 faculty are in your third bullet, eight. You've already hired five more you're searching for. And then I need just a basic primer. When you talk about 8-to-1 faculty to student to faculty ratio for clinical sites, that maybe let us know how many of those 13 additional are clinical and how many are classroom that would otherwise support more than the 62 net increase in the first two bullets. Can you just sort of run through that on a basic level?
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for the question. A majority of our challenge with faculty are the clinical faculty. So of those eight that were hired, six of those are clinical nursing faculty and two are didactic. And of the five more searches underway, four of those will be clinical faculty and one of those will be didactic. And what that means is when we've all been to the hospital, and none of us want a nurse that doesn't have any experience or doesn't know what they're doing. So our clinical education is mandated by many of our accrediting programs, not just nursing. But with that, that's where students learn and get the hands-on skills. And so it takes a qualified faculty member and a clinician to manage their learning and their growth in those settings. And so the accrediting body is the program accrediting body is the body that mandates that eight students per one faculty in the clinical setting. So that means that when we have eight students, we can have eight students at a time with one faculty nurse at a clinical setting, but not more than that. And that is it's a patient safety issue, if that makes sense for you. So again, most of our struggle is not to hire didactic faculty here in Anchorage, but it's clinical faculty in Anchorage and then didactic and clinical faculty around the state. Did that answer your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dean. The other question was where you are looking to hire those 13, have hired and are looking to hire those 13.
Yes, thank you. And Those will be, we're looking for someone in Dillingham, we're looking for someone in Nome, and we are, I believe, one of the eight hires is a new clinical faculty in Bethel. We are struggling to find a permanent person for Dillingham. And when we can't find faculty to hire in those outreach sites, that means we can't bring students in to those outreach sites. So students that have a lot of interest in becoming a nurse would then have to come to Anchorage or Fairbanks or some other area where we have some faculty availability there. So we give a geo difference to try and supplement the faculty lines in those distant sites, but Nome and Dillingham are our current struggles. We've had a longtime faculty in Kodiak, and they are retiring at the end of this year, so we're also struggling at this point to find a nurse educator for Kodiak.
Thank you. It looks like we have a question from Senator Bjorkman online.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and administration of the university for indulging my distance today. My question is in regards to the nurse training program, specifically in other healthcare fields as well. Has there been any desire or push from the university to partner with the healthcare industry in training up more staff to support them in a way that you might receive some funding from the healthcare industry directly? Certainly when we look at the internship and apprenticeship model that we see in construction and other crafts and trades, that's kind of a model that they pursue, supporting the training of their own workforce, whereas healthcare largely relies on the public sector through the university to provide that training. Has the university pursued any relationship with the healthcare industry to support some of the training that you all are looking to ramp up?
Yes, thank you, Senator Bjorkman, through the chair. We work very, very closely with our community partners, whether that is PROV or the university health facility up in Fairbanks. I'm blanking on that. Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, FMH. So many acronyms here. But we work very closely with all of our community partners to try and work with getting their clinical staff to want to be clinical preceptors or clinical faculty for us. One of the challenges that we're facing with that is that nurses in clinical settings are burned out across the country. It's not unique to Alaska. It's across the country. They're just, COVID took a toll and the work that they had to do. So there, a lot of the places are hiring, most healthcare places or facilities are hiring traveling nurses, as an example. And the facility, the hospital or the clinic, has to pay sometimes three times the salary just to get these traveling nurses to come in because we don't have enough nurses to hire here in the state. So again, we're trying to grow our own here and provide as much as we can with that. But one thing that we are doing is trying to help with partnerships that we have. Providence has been a longtime supporter of our programs across the college, but especially in nursing. Fairbanks Memorial Hospital has been a longtime supporter. Matsu Health Foundation. We have close ties with AHA, the Alaska Health and Hospital Association. So we're politicking as much as we possibly can to create those relationships, but we're running into that burnout. So our facilities that we place students in, our clinical sites, have not enough nurses to do what they need. So they're leery to load more work onto those nurses to become supervising faculty also. So it's a challenge, without a doubt.
Very good. Just to follow up, Madam Chair, if I may.
Follow up.
Thank you. is the healthcare industry willing to put forward funding to help you increase capacity?
Yes, but again, we can have as much funding as we need, and we are still challenged to bring nurse educators into the state. So it's a supply shortage, really. We have plenty of students that want to become nurses, and with this expansion money from the state, we have resources to do that. But again, we struggle to hire enough faculty to help with this. So it's very complicated. I wish it was as easy as having money, because that's a lot easier at times.
Senator Borkman, does that answer your question?
It does. If I can follow up with just with one more.
Follow up.
Thank you. So your programs are fully subscribed then? You're not having your trouble finding people to fill all of your programs?
Well, we're not having any trouble finding nurses or our students that want to be nurses. Yeah, we do have places, student spots available in some of our other allied health programs that we don't have full capacity yet. We are expanding, just so everyone knows, our social work, our master's in social work, and we intend to double the number of seats in the program within the next 4 years. So we just got some grant funding from Recover Alaska to support that program growth. So we hope to make a dent in some of the mental and behavioral health care needs in the state with that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Craig. I do see President Pitney. Do you have an additional comment or some additional information here?
Yeah, through the chair, thank you. The apprenticeship models that are going on, I think that there is so much need for trained workers that the apprenticeship model, as well as the expansion of our programs as quickly as we can and speed to completion as quickly as we can, they're all important. And so as the apprenticeship model matures, and as we are in partnership on the other needs, just we think that that apprenticeship model just adds a future student to a degree program, but that they get some of their on-the-job training. And so I just want to say that we are completely supportive of the apprenticeship model as well as the expansion model, because we're not meeting half the need our state has together. So it's a really important thing, and with teachers as well.
Thank you, President Pitney. I do want to do a time check here, as we're at 4:43 and we have about 10 more slides to go. So I just want to make sure that folks know that.
Zip it.
Senator Tobin, if I may, I'll go through the next four slides very quickly on education tax credits in the interest of time. And thank you for communicating your interest in this very important topic. We just talked about community partners. This is one avenue statutorily that can occur. You see a check there. So there you can see it's the program that allows for taxpaying entities to make charitable contributions for supporting education in Alaska. The picture you see there is a $1 million check from Ken Ross to support the Trotieta Initiative for Native Success in Interior Alaska. Basically, it's a statutory animal. It's got a sunset date right now for January 1st, 2025, and the credits must be continued by the Alaska legislature via statute. The important thing is that it reaches direct workforce demands in particular areas, and education and the students are beneficiaries, there's no doubt about that. And then the entities giving the funds receive a credit to their corporate income tax, the fisheries tax, the mining tax, et cetera. They can receive a credit for cash or equipment. You can see there that those are some of the beneficiaries that can receive the funds directly as long as it relates to education in some capacity, and that there's the statutory parameters in front of you, cash or equipment. And then the real question is, that is a legislative debate, and is always worthy of debate, and the last time it happened was in 2018, is how much should the credit be, and how much should the sunset go, how long will the sunset be? Currently it's at 50% of all contributions, and the combined credit amount is at $1 million in years past. It is true that it's been up to upwards of $5 million, and that could be a good worthwhile debate, whether that can occur or not. And then the question is, does the legislature want to go back to a phased approach or not? You can see there that they used to have a phased credit structure based on contributions with certain parameters at 100,000, the next 200,000, and 300,000. And so that's always a worthwhile review to see if there's wisdom in going back to that model or continuing the model as it stands. The important thing is, from our perspective, is to ensure that the sunset, good time is given to ensure that the statute itself does not sunset. So with that, I will move on to slide 14 in our budget summary.
Thank you so much, Director Hutchinson. I know that we can expect legislation coming forthwith, either from my office or another.
So with slide 14 and
Do you want me to take that?
President Pitney, please, if you would like, the budget summary.
Sure. So our board's budget, we've kind of taken it in two parts. One is our maintain stability. And it's focused on our compensation request and our unavoidable fixed costs, as well as our number one facilities priority for deferred maintenance. So right now, the compensation, the university's compensation request, and this is, I mentioned it earlier, it's a 2.75% increase for the fiscal year 24, and it is a 3% increase for faculty in fiscal year 23 per our bargaining agreement or contract, and then also for the staff with the raising it from a 2% to a 3% for fiscal year 23. And so that's a supplemental of $6.5 million for 23, and a $12 million request for the 24, 2.75%, and then 6.5 to cover the base of the 23 supplemental. So all of those are right now in the supplemental, the amendment budget, and the December 15 budget. What's not in are those unavoidable fixed costs. And we're facing, just like everybody else, tremendous pressure on our cybersecurity. And we've done pretty well looking for an investment there. Our insurance premiums are going up very quickly. And then our emergency response, disability, and compliance issues. During the significant reductions, our student library digital access was diminished. We'd like to bring some of that back. And then we have shared services and human resources and procurement. Those are the unavoidable fixed costs to run our base that we're seeking funding for in what we call our stability budget. There's also two small pieces in the operating budget. One's not shown here. One is partially shown here. There's a $50,000 increase for our WAMI expansion and a $2 million capital request for space for the WAMI expansion. Now, the WAMI expansion is going from 20 students to 30 students. And the University of Alaska Anchorage has part of that expansion, and the University of Washington has part of that. There's also a line in the budget for the University of Washington portion which is actually tuition support for the students to go to be in the WAMI program. And it's the difference between in-state graduate tuition and the out-of-state medical tuition at UW. That's about $1.6 million. And that's in the ACPE budget. But the WAMI expansion is in the governor's budget, as well as this $2 million for the capital. And then our top priority for deferred maintenance, our total priorities for deferred maintenance is $72 million. Our top priority is this UAA, and it's heating systems for three facilities. It was in the legislator's budget last year, but all but one priority, deferred maintenance priority, was vetoed last year. This is our top priority. It was second priority last year. We have other requests to advance faster, to rebuild faster on issues. It is additional fixed costs and facilities maintenance and contractual services, and building program capacity. And it touches on many of the expansion of many of the areas that we were talking about earlier. And then, of course, our capital budget. But I really wanted it to really focus on that maintaining stability, because that's the base on which we can work with partners and focus on enrollment. And so that's the most important piece. I think we could probably, I touched on what was on 17 earlier in my comments. If you have questions on the land grant, happy to talk about it. But in the interest of time, I could just take any questions or call it good.
I am not seeing any questions here from the committee. I am not seeing any questions.
It sounds like there's been opportunities to hear about the land grant status. And but we are excited about it. And with that, I'm happy to take any follow-up questions later or address anything specific that you might have. And thank you for your time.
I'm seeing no further questions, but thank you very much. I really appreciated this, and I think the committee really enjoyed hearing this update and this positive momentum around preparing Alaska's future teachers.
Excellent.
Well, with that concludes our agenda for today. The next meeting of Senate Education Committee will be on Wednesday, February 22nd. The meeting will feature the first hearing of Senate Bill 29, a bill sponsored by our own President Stevens. The goal of SB 29 is to improve the awareness of the importance of civic education in the state of Alaska. And I think now, as we approach one of our favorite presidents entering into hospice, it's no more of an important time to talk about civic engagement. We will also be hearing Senate Bill 24, which is sponsored by Senator L.V. Gray Jackson. It is to amend existing health education curricula to include mental health curriculum in all K-12 classrooms. And we know this is so needed. We heard about it repeatedly from students who provided testimony earlier in this session. With no other business before us today, I'm going to adjourn today's meeting at 4:54 p.m.